Hi, Steve Pomerantz here, host of On the Money with today's On the Money Extra, where we feature market updates and insights as well as guest interviews with noted financial experts to help you stay informed and learn the facts to make the right decisions about money. So let's get started. Robert Sherrar is the senior international fund manager of the Commonwealth Funds, and he's the creator and fund manager of their five international mutual funds, which cover Japan, Australia, New Zealand, the real estate fund they have, a global fund, and the Africa fund, which is what I want to discuss with him today. Welcome to the show, Robert.
Thank you.
So before we get started, very quickly, we're seeing that international countries and markets are actually significantly outperforming the U.S. market this year. What's going on there?
Well, I think there's several factors coming into play. One is that the economics have improved in some regions, really without people recognizing that it's happening. And Japan is a good example of that. We hear about all their problems, but there seems to be some traction taking place there.
Mm-hmm.
The strong dollar has made a lot of their export products for countries cheaper, and we're seeing local earnings being more profitable because of that, because they're able to export or sell more goods and services. And the other is that the U.S. market, it was just so hot that I think it's taken a breather here to let it catch up with itself.
Okay. Well, that's a good explanation. So those of you who have properly asset allocated portfolios with good exposure overseas are doing better this year than those who only have U.S.-based investments. So let's talk about Africa. First of all, let me say this. There seem to be three basic categories in the international market: developed countries, emerging markets, and frontier markets. What would the Africa Fund, what category would that be put into?
Well, the continent of Africa has a number of stock markets. In fact, we have on our website links to every stock market in Africa, because I think people are not familiar with how many markets there really are.
Right.
But at the same time, within Africa, you have clearly frontier markets. Those are markets probably like Malawi would be a good example, that are very small, trade somewhat by appointment. And then you have more developed markets like South Africa, which some people would classify emerging market, but it's certainly a very well-functioning stock exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Nigeria, which is large and probably too big to be called just frontier, but more of an emerging market in my mind.
You know, blame it on the media, blame it on the fact that some of the events that happen there get so much attention. But, you know, I think we tend to see Africa as one big region of economic stagnation, civil war, disease, and poverty. Is that generally true?
Oh, absolutely not. There are certainly pockets and problems in Africa, but much of the continent is showing quite a bit of vitality. You're having a great increase in the consumer class. They're demanding more goods and services. Their civil society is demanding more transparency. Per capita income is going up. Infrastructure is improving very rapidly. And when you look into the markets, particularly in the SADC region, the southern part of Africa, and some of the Western African markets, there's a lot going on. It's very, very positive news.
Even though the perhaps business is improving, as you say, there's a burgeoning middle class and so on, it seems that investing in those countries would be somewhat impractical. How liquid are some of these markets? How do you actually, as a fund manager, go in and invest? Quick question. Are all the investments you make public investments, or do you make private investments as well?
Through our mutual fund, we only do publicly traded securities.
Okay.
One of the ways we deal with liquidity is to use some of the more developed markets and buy companies that are listed on those stock exchanges that do activity throughout the continent.
Oh, okay.
So, for example, in South Africa, there's a number of companies that have a big presence on the rest of the continent, are benefiting from the growth, but have some benefits and stability of being located in a market that you can trade the stocks very easily.
I get it. So Africa is also thought of as a country enormously rich in natural resources. And as companies develop those resources or exploit them, you know, there's profits to be made. And China has noticed this and has more and more involvement on the continent. Is there anything else going on that you look at that's not naturally resource-based? And by that, I guess, what are we talking about? Mining and gold. Is there anything besides that that interests you over there?
Oh, absolutely. And if you look at our portfolio, we're very underweighted in resource companies. If somebody wants to buy a resource stock, they don't need to buy an Africa portfolio. It's the same in Australia. You know, you can buy these global companies that are resource companies. So what we've looked at is the consumer markets. We are buying companies that are selling to consumers, whether it be food products or financial service products or health products or education products, transportation companies, communication companies, infrastructure types of things. There are a lot of opportunities, and these are growing based on other than just the energy play or the natural resource play.
Hey, Rob, have you seen, you know, the Economist magazine, have you seen that chart they had, or that map rather, of Africa? And they said, how big is Africa? And they try to fit all the countries in the world into Africa. And I couldn't believe it.
Oh, yeah. I can't tell you the exact countries that are in it, but I know.
Everything.
I was impressed with the same thing.
Everything's in it. The whole United States, all of Russia, all of China, the Middle East, I mean, all, South America, it all fits into the continent of Africa. It's an astonishing map. What does that tell you about what's available over there?
Well, I mean, the size is tremendous. And, you know, I find that when I get on a plane in Dakar, Senegal, to go to Johannesburg, and 8 hours later I get there, you begin to understand how big the continent is. And how diverse it is, and how that size can mask a lot of opportunities. You know, a couple quick things. You hear a lot about the problems in Africa. I'm the last person the Nigerian government would ever hire as their Chamber of Commerce spokesperson, because I think they have a lot of issues in Nigeria. But to their credit, they've just had an election. The president has stepped down without any violence. It was hotly contested. Part of the campaign was to eliminate some of the corruption, and I think the new president has certainly pledged to try to do that, and the people believe he might. So you're seeing a number of states where there's been quietly changes of governments, not just the first time, but several times. That's having a big impact on transparency and the ability to do business on the continent. And if you miss out on the growth story that's there, and it's huge, I think longer term here, you really are going to pay a penalty for doing so, because there's a lot of interest. We see a lot of international companies. I've been on the continent well over 50 times. And every time I go, I see new things and meet more people coming to do business there. And Americans really have not even scratched the surface in terms of the relationships or developing the activities.
Well, as a country of investors, we're very much home-based anyway. We maybe put 15 or 20% of our money outside of the country. And really, the U.S. really only represents about 50% of the world market. So there's opportunities out there, but just by our very nature, we don't take advantage of. In terms of volatility, in terms of some measures of risk, if I put a dollar into your fund or $100, what can I expect in terms of annual volatility?
Well, I can't really give you a percentage, but in that context, you know, one could look at our performance records and see that I think we've been less volatile than the indexes have, and I think we try to do that in all our funds if we can. By the style of the investing we do, we try to buy mid and small cap stocks that sometimes are more subject to local activities than they are global, which helps give you a counterbalance to investing in the U.S. But you should expect, because of currency, that you have an additional issue in any international investment you don't have in a domestic. If the currencies go against you, you can lose, even if the stock's going up in value when you convert it back. If a currency depreciates, then you can have the benefit in the foreign markets, because they appreciate, you get that extra currency lift.
What are some of the currencies that exist there?
Well, most countries would have their own currency. They've not really regionalized. Like the SADC region, which is most of Southern Africa, is an economic region like the European Union. There's actually three big regions like that. However, they don't have this common currency. I think they've seen the problems the euro has had and their inability to control the different countries.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, what they've done is really kept their own currency. So you would have the South African rand.
Sure.
It would be a good example of a currency that's well-known in Malawi. It's a kwacha. You know, each country has its own. Zimbabwe has really created to a U.S. dollar standard, so they trade the U.S. dollar in Zimbabwe.
Okay, so that's another one of the risks of a portfolio like this. It's not only their stock market moving up and down, but it's the movement of the local currency in which you've invested this money versus
right.
the U.S. dollar when you go to withdraw the money.
A couple things, though, to think about in a foreign portfolio is we find that the dividends are often higher.
Okay.
They have more respect for the shareholder
mm-hmm.
in terms of paying the cash back and not retaining it all.
Okay.
That doesn't mean they don't have growth opportunities. I think they work a little bit harder, and they pay it out to the shareholders and figure other ways to grow their business. So you get good dividend yields. You often buy these on lower price to book or lower price to earnings. Remember, many of these countries do use international accounting standards, and those will differ slightly from GAAP. So you have to make some adjustments in those, but they're often more attractive. You know, for example, I think our average PE is probably under 10, whereas the African Titans Index is around 23.
Oh, okay.
The reason we're so much lower is the small and mid-cap and avoiding some of the big resource stocks.
So, unfortunately, we're out of time. My guest is Robert Sharar. He is the fund manager of the Africa Fund, as well as four other funds that are run by Commonwealth Family of Mutual Funds. So Google Commonwealth. What is the website address?
www.commonwealthfunds.com.
Very simple, commonwealthfunds.com. Hey, Robert, I know this is the second time we've had you on. Thank you for informing us once again about Africa, and we'll be back in touch with you at sometime in the future.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You're listening to On the Money with certified financial planner Steve Pomerantz. If you'd like information about guests, topics, or anything you hear on this program, call 866-MONEY01 or visit the show's website at onthemoneyradio.org.